Welcome to Dubs OT, your weekly Warriors podcast on thesportsvirus.com. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Whitson and Joe Castellano.
Well, Ray, the Warriors had been pretty hot. They had won a couple of games in a row. They had won 4 out of 5, but they run into a Pacers team that was really solid in the fourth quarter. And even though it looked like throughout the game on Tuesday, the Warriors maybe were going to get that one, they end up losing 104-95. And even without Victor Oladipo, who's out, is, you know, he's got this knee issue and they don't want him to play back-to-back games, still the Pacers were able to figure out the Warriors. And a lot of it has to do with the defense. And I think a lot of teams are going to follow up on what the Raptors did and what the Pacers did as far as this box and one on Steph Curry. Uh-huh. And, you know, he can have his big nights still with that going on, but it is frustrating if he's not, you know, completely on his game. And, you know, wasn't one of Curry's best games. He just couldn't carry the Warriors on Tuesday.
No, and this is what we talked about in our last podcast. If you're an opposing team, you're going to look at throwing everything at Curry. I mean, that's where it all begins for the Warriors offensively. And, you know, when he gets it going, as we've seen when he scored 62, it's a sight to behold. And another night he had 38. There are going to be nights like that. We talked about how he needed to score 30 to win, and that was true until a few nights ago. And that's what they're going to need. They're going to need help for Curry. And part of that is, you know, recognizing defenses, reading them sooner, and getting better looks sooner in the clock, as opposed to later on the clock when the chances are you're going to get worse looks. So they're figuring things out, and so you're going to have a step forward, a step back. I think all in all, pretty good homestand, 4-3, a couple of real good wins, certainly beating the Clippers after they worked you over the game before was a nice one. Felt like this was one they should have gotten last night, but this is sort of the progress we're looking at, the step forward, step back. There are going to be nights like this. They're going to be spectacular nights, and they're going to be nights where they're just a little off. And, you know, like you said, Pacers without Oladipo and a little bit tired, I felt like this is one that they should have salted away. Now, they didn't have Pascal, and we're finding out that Pascal is becoming a real important part of this rotation with the second unit, you know, playing backup center and, you know, using his quickness against bigger centers. And he's been pretty consistent offensively. So that affected the rotation. That affected, you know, how much they could generate on offense last night. So they get him back, I think they'll be better off. I think overall the signs are encouraging. They're not a great team, but they look pretty good. They certainly look a lot better than they did when they started the homestand.
No doubt about that. Yeah, I mean, you have a better feeling about this team. I mean, Steve Kerr talked about the box and one and the Warriors facing that, and here's what he had to say.
In my years in the NBA, as a player, I don't remember anybody playing box and one. I don't think it was legal when I played. But even in my years coaching, you know, just over the last couple of years, teams have started to run some box and one. Obviously, we have different personnel now, which is contributing to what teams are doing. They're sort of playing the odds, and so they're just going to make other people, try to beat them. But the good news is, if you play a box and one, it's 3-on-2 all day. And if you get organized and get sharp, then there's going to be great shots. And that's what we have to do. As a staff, we've got to help our players get organized and execute better against this kind of stuff.
And you mentioned Eric Pascal being out, and he seems to be really, you know, he's a part of that. He makes good decisions, it seems like to me, on offense, and they were pretty indecisive with the basketball, and, you know, especially when it got to crunch time, and the Pacers just really, they were causing the turnovers, they were making the stops, and the Warriors were not.
Yeah, and down the stretch, I mean, if you allow a 10-0 run, that's bad news. So, I mean, that was part of it. And, you know, they can't depend on Curry every single night. He's going to go through a lot of wear and tear this season. Let's be honest about it. They're going to bump around, and he's used to that, but he's 32 now. The nice thing is he's had a lot of time to rest that body over the last year and a half. So right now he's still pretty bouncy. And, you know, I want to see how it looks like later on in the season and whether they're going to figure out things offensively and get a consistent second threat to help out Curry and take some of the load off of him. You know, Klay Thompson was there on the bench last night. It was nice to see him. He's in a walking boot, but he isn't coming back this season. But this was one of those nights. Well, they need him every night, of course, but especially on a night like last night. He would have taken so much of the pressure off of Steph, and he would have nailed a lot of open jumpers, I think. But he's not there now. So you're going to see the box in one. You're going to see the press. And here's the thing about the press that coaches will always tell players. Yeah, they're going to put pressure on you, but they're also exposing themselves. And you've got to recognize that. And if you can, you know, break the press, whether it's half court or whether it's, you know, with a box in one or whether it's full court, if you can break that press, opportunities are going to arise. And that's where Draymond comes in, and he knows to get the ball to the right person at the right time. But the other part of this, Joe, is simply that you've got guys who haven't played with Steph, and they're just not used to the motion offense yet. So that's just going to take time. And I think of Oubre in particular. You know, Wiggins is starting to figure a few things out. And he's starting to block shots on the defensive end, which I think is surprising a lot of people. But there were a couple of times where Oubre was right next to Steph in a corner, for example. That's not where he's supposed to be. So it's just about learning about where you're supposed to be on the floor and learning where Steph is going to be. And, you know, Draymond and Steph have played together for a decade. They have that mental telepathy. These other guys don't yet.
I want to talk about each of those players you mentioned individually, Wiggins and Oubre, because let's start with Wiggins. I really think that he's enthused to be a Warrior. You can tell that he is getting after it more on defense maybe than he did in Minnesota. I mean, the blocks you mentioned, he had five, which I think that was a career high. You know, he's looking to be more aggressive scoring. He wasn't doing that the first couple, three games. I mean, he looked like he was asleep the very beginning of the season, but now he seems to be more aggressive. He does look like a guy who can step up when other teams are shutting down Curry. Now, I don't know that he's going to go for 40, but he is a guy who can score between 20 and 30 points and do a lot for you as far as rebounding and playing some defense.
Well, you used the word enthused, and he did look enthused at the start of the year. And people were wondering, I mean, how much does this guy love basketball? And I think that question's come up in the past. You know, he's kind of a poker face out there, but I think that the last week or so, it's been looking a whole lot better. And, you know, maybe that helps the enthusiasm when you start getting confidence within a system, especially with a team, you know, as accomplished as the Warriors. You're coming in as a guy who's, you know, had some moments in the NBA that hasn't reached, I think, the potential that a lot of people hoped for him. Well, this is the place to do it. If you can't do it here, it ain't going to happen for you. So this is a golden opportunity for him in his career. And they need that secondary scoring, and he's a guy who can get his own shot. He's a guy who can drive. He's a guy who can take somebody off the dribble. He's a guy who can hit a three. So you hope that continues to develop for you, and I think that was one of the encouraging developments on this homestand. And, yeah, on the defensive end, I mean, the guy has surpassed career numbers in blocks just here in the first few weeks, and especially in the last seven or eight games. So you hope to see that continue. And as far as Oubre, I mean, they're leaving him in the starting lineup. They're trying to get his confidence up. He shot a little better last night.
Yeah.
He had three threes. So you're hoping that continues. That's going to be very important because those two, Wiggins and Oubre, looked totally lost. It looked like they were going to detract from what was going on with this team. But you have to give them time. You just do, especially with Curry and Draymond back on the floor. And while you're figuring that out, you're 6-5, right? You haven't played yourself out of anything. I mean, if the season ended today, I love that phrase, you know, they're in the playoffs. But everybody's kind of in the mix. The Lakers are 9-3. They kind of bolted ahead, and I think that they're the best team. But there's going to be a lot of opportunities to stay in the mix for this team. They're not going to be great. You just hope they don't play themselves out of a playoff spot early in the year. They haven't done that. So you move on. I mean, they've got some tough games coming up, although, you know, the Suns now dealing with contact tracing, the Nuggets losing Porter, and Malone saying that he's in the COVID protocol. And I think that's going to be the X factor for this season for the Warriors and everybody else is COVID.
No, absolutely. And we'll get more into that a little bit later. I wanted to also talk about in the middle in this game against the Pacers, because the center for Indiana, Miles Turner, had a fantastic game. I mean, he was hitting shots from the outside, scored 22, had 12 rebounds. And then the power forward, Sabonis, he had 18 points, 14 rebounds. So, I mean, it's not really that much of a knock against Weissman, but he did get into foul trouble. A lot of it has to do with, you know, when he's setting these screens, sometimes he's moving and the officials aren't giving him a break on that because he's a rookie. And without Pascal, really the only other option you had was Kevon Looney. And Looney is valuable to this team, especially now when you don't have Pascal at the moment and you're not going to have Chris for a while. So you're short on big men. And, you know, Kevon Looney is a guy that might see more minutes because of, you know, the fact that he has the experience. And, you know, you run up against these good centers, a guy like Turner, and, you know, it's hard to match up with a guy like that sometimes.
Well, yeah, Turner took advantage of the situation last night, and it was a bad night for Weissman to get in foul trouble. Not that any night's a good night, but especially last night because he didn't have Pascal at the backup center, so you needed more minutes from Looney. And I think Looney is important to this team at a certain number of minutes. And then, you know, more than he even expected to play last night, even with Pascal out, because Weissman got four fouls by halftime, and he was making rookie mistakes. Although I think one of the moving screens wasn't really moving that much. I think, you know, he's not getting the whistle from, you know, the benefit of the whistle from NBA referees in his rookie season. But, again, I have to keep saying this. The guy played three college games.
Exactly. You know,
and he didn't have much time to practice due to the COVID protocol. So he's learning on the fly. And you see moments where, you know, you're tantalized. I mean, that dunk he had on Siakam the other night, you know, a couple of spectacular blocks last night. But, some, you know, this is something I wanted to mention. I kind of underlined it in my notes here that block shots are great. You want to have that presence in the middle. But block shots don't always mean good defense. And I think Weissman talked about that. There are times when he needs to refrain because you're going to leave your man. And you're going to leave him on the weak side. And the ball may still get to him, and it's an easy bucket. You're going to expose something when you go up for the block defensively. So you just have to learn to be judicious with that. You want to have that presence in the middle. You want to be able to block shots, but you don't want to leave holes in the defense when you do that. So he's learning that too. But the nice thing is he recognizes that. And it sounds like he's a really coachable guy, and, you know, he's 19 years old. So we're going to see a whole lot of ups and downs with this guy. I think, you know, the story for this year is to continue to learn. And I think the bigger story is what he's going to be like in 2 years.
Here's Steve Kerr's assessment of James Weissman so far.
I thought James did well. You know, there was so every night is a good night for James, even though it's going to be frustrating for him at times. He was frustrated with his fourth foul that he picked up late in this first half. But, you know, it's a great experience to go through it and to understand, you know, how you have to play with fouls, you know, how you have to play against a team, you know, playing zone as a big, what are your responsibilities? And so, you know, this is a real challenge for our team and for James to try to, you know, piece all this together on the fly with teams throwing a lot of different defenses at us. It's there's a lot going on for James, for somebody who's, you know, only been in the league for a few weeks. So great experience. It's going to be frustrating at times, but he's going to get better as a result.
The next game against Denver on Thursday, you got Jokic, and then you've got, for Phoenix, you got Ayton, one of the great young centers in the league as well. So, I mean, he's constantly going to be tested and having to get better, you know, and yeah. I think Steve Kerr is going to handle him well. He's going to give him enough minutes to where he'll get the experience, but he's not going to expose him too much, you know, to where if he's having a little bit of a rough time, I think he's shown that he's willing to pull Weissman out of there in crunch time. And Weissman's, you know, not a big baby about it. I think he's handling that well. Mm-hmm. He seems to be handling anything thrown at him so far.
Well, I think he knows. And first of all, no point in getting Gumby shoulders this early in the season and this early in your career. And he knows, like we just mentioned, that this is all learning on the fly. And the best thing to do is just get out there and play and learn the lessons. And, you know, Steve Kerr talks to him. He talked to him after he got that fourth foul last night, said, you know, you got to recognize, you know, that how many fouls you got and when you've got to hold back. You know, unfortunately, it doesn't help you defensively because for example, when Miles Turner is going up against you, you just got to keep your arms straight up, and you know, not try to block the shot, not try to press him too much. The veteran players know how to take advantage of that anyway. That's part of the problem. They're going to put a body or a shoulder into you and try to draw the foul no matter what, even if you're doing the right thing. So the point is, don't get into that foul trouble in the first place. But, you know, this is trial by fire in the NBA for this guy, and, you know, along with having the pressure of being the second overall pick. And I think he's handled it pretty well so far. But what you want to see is consistency. And that's going to just take some time. In the meantime, you know, we're not going to get to the smooth part at the end of the roller coaster ride. We're just getting started with this thing. I mean, I remember the first time I rode Colossus at Magic Mountain, and I was 14 years old. It's a true story. They opened up because my family was working with a group that had a child center, child development center. They got an early sneak peek at Magic Mountain way back when. So we got to ride Colossus before it was open to the public. And that thing was, you know, big wooden roller coaster, the old classic roller coaster, and that would rattle your ribs. I mean, I was sore when I got off that thing. But at the end of it, it's a relief. You're like, oh, man, I did it. Well, I think at the end of the season, James Wiseman's going to say, yeah, I did it. I'm an NBA player now. And I've learned a lot, and I can do this. I can get through this. So excuse me for making a reference to a 50-year-old roller coaster, but I think this faces apt, right? You know, I mean, this is the journey he's going on.
Since we're going to talk about roller coasters for just a minute, first of all, the Giant Dipper in Santa Cruz to me is my favorite. It's old school. It's a little scary, but it's my favorite. And you're talking to somebody who actually worked at Marriott's Great America. It used to be called Marriott's.
Really?
Yeah, for two years when I was in college, you know, in the summer. And I worked in the food warehouse. So I could ride those rides anytime I wanted after closing. They would just leave it open for us to go on the rides anytime we wanted. So
Ooh.
I think I got my fill. I don't think I ever want to be on a roller coaster again after that.
Yeah, you'd have to really love it, you know, to keep taking advantage of that. And when I was younger, that was one of my favorite things, for sure. I you know, if I'd have known you, I'd say, hey, Joe, any chance I could sneak in?
Exactly.
But those days are over, I can tell you that. You know, I ran through a lot of those roller coasters at the, you know, the established theme parks. I wouldn't do it at the county fair. I'm sorry. I don't trust a carny with my safety. Other than that, I'm good.
All right, so back to basketball. And I mean, I noticed that NBC Sports Bay Area had a really good stat during the game about the Warriors bench being one of the best in the NBA in a lot of different categories. And really, the leader of that bench is Damian Lee. Damian Lee has been a great story for the Warriors. I mean, he was undrafted. And this is a guy who contributes in a lot of ways. And, you know, I know he's a little streaky with his three-point shooting, but I trust him, and I think Steve Kerr does, with the big shots. I mean, he won a game earlier this year with a big shot at the end. And he's the kind of guy that you, in crunch time, I think you can count on to take some of the big shots and also to play defense, to go after the loose balls, to do all the dirty work. I think he's one of the most valuable players on this team. What do you think?
So far, yeah. He's one of their better players, one of their better shooters. And they need that badly. You know, he's a guy who's knocked around a little bit. He's 28 years old. You know, those undrafted guys, sometimes they're the most determined. And, you know, that's the thing you tell players. Look, there's only two rounds in the NBA draft. There's a lot of talent out there. You can be one of those guys. And there is a history of guys who are undrafted making NBA careers. So, you know, I mean, he went several years through the bumps and bruises of playing, for example, for the Maine Red Claws, okay, and the Santa Cruz Warriors. But he finally latched down with the Hawks, and then, you know, he's made his mark with the Warriors. And, yes, he's Steph's brother-in-law, but he's earning his time. And guess what? Now he's in the closing lineup. He's playing closing minutes. I think what Kerr has done is, we talked about Wiseman. He is being dialed back for some of the closing minutes. Better to have a shooter on the floor. And that's what we talked about a couple weeks ago. They probably need to play Lee more. They need to have more shooters on the floor. They just don't have enough of them on this team right now. And you know, I saw this stat from Anthony Slater of The Athletic. Wiseman was -47 plus minus on the homestand.
Oh.
So, yeah, that's kind of glaring. That stat doesn't always tell you the whole story. But over a number of games, it's one thing that you look at. And so, yeah, Damian Lee's been a tough player. I mean, it's not, it's far from the lineup of death, the death lineup the Warriors used to roll out there, the small ball lineup that devastated the league and kind of changed everybody's perspective 5 or 6 years ago. But you work with what you got, and this is a guy who keeps improving. So, and I think he's earned the time. I mean, there'll be times defensively where it's a struggle, but you need that shooting threat on the floor. And I haven't checked his three-point stats, but he was certainly up there among the best on the team.
Yeah, I think he slumped a little bit in this last game, but I think you're right. You know, it's funny about the plus-minus. That was always a big hockey stat, not a basketball stat, but it's become more and more important. I mean, people are really looking at the plus-minus in the NBA now.
Well, I think it's one thing you look at, you know, as part of a whole range of stats that are going to tell you the story. And again, in one game, maybe it doesn't mean that much, but over time, I think it does. Sometimes it means something in a game. You'll see, a substitution made, and all of a sudden the lead goes from 10 down to 2, or you lose the lead, and you ask what happened, and the number tells you, it's like a signal, something's wrong here or something's very right here. And then you go in and you look at the reason for the signal. It's almost like an indicator on a dashboard on your car. So, it's just one part of the story. But, yeah, minus 47 for the homestand for, what, 7 games, that jumps out at you. And they won some of those games. They won most of those games. So, that's to be expected, again, for a rookie player who's had so little real high-level basketball experience to begin with. But, again, we see flashes of why they chose this guy number 2. And again, that to me is going to be one of the very interesting aspects of this year, to see how James Wiseman develops. But also, who steps up? And their bench isn't that bad. And Damian Lee has been a part of that, but now he's getting some closing minutes. And it's nice to see a guy who's knocked around a little bit earn that.
Everybody, I think, was minus in that fourth quarter against the Pacers, though, because that was that was kind of ugly. All right, you touched on COVID and the NBA, and right now, Ray, it kind of feels a little bit about that sort of like that turning point in the NFL where they had some games that were getting postponed, and you wondered, I mean, is this season going to be put on pause? And then it never was. I mean, they worked their way through it. They postponed games. They rescheduled. They did what they had to do, and now they've made it into the playoffs in the NFL. You know, and the same thing in baseball. Baseball had its issue for a while there. Remember the Marlins had, you know, most of their team on the COVID list, and somehow they made it through. Well, now in the NBA, you had game on Monday, Pelicans-Mavs, that was postponed. Tuesday, Celtics-Bulls, postponed. And then today, Wednesday, Hawks-Suns, postponed. And now we don't even know about the Warriors game against the Suns on Friday because of this with the COVID issues. So where are we headed with this? I mean, I know they're trying to have tougher protocols. They don't want players to go anywhere when they're on the road, even at home. You know, you're supposed to just go to the arena and go home. But you're going to continue to have problems if all of the players don't follow it.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got players going maskless to parties, you know, despite all the advisories and rules, that's going to be a problem, and you can't follow these guys everywhere, right? So, and you got a lot of players in the league, so that makes it very hard. So, to answer your question, where is this going? My answer is hell if I know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to answer you with a non-answer. I did a radio hit a few months ago, and basically, I said I wouldn't put money on any of these leagues finishing their seasons. But, you know, they got through it. College football is a whole different story. And I think in some ways a shameful story. But they got through it to the championship game. They got through it in the NBA, and I think what they did was extraordinary in the bubble. Hockey, too. And they're starting up again. And baseball got through it as well, although you had a pretty embarrassing moment in the championship there for the Dodgers with Justin Turner. There are so many X factors, and one of them now with COVID is it's spiking again in a lot of places after the holiday season. Certainly California is experiencing that in a big way right now, as is Arizona, for example. And I think some scientists and doctors have mentioned that people are getting COVID fatigue. And I understand that. I mean, it's been rough for everybody. And, you know, a lot of people are railing against the restrictions. And, I don't understand why anybody finds it so hard to wear a damn mask, but that's a part of the problem, too. And so people are kind of letting down their guard a little bit. Other people are openly defying it. So you can't get a handle on this because of all those problems. And it's seeping into the NBA. It's seeped into the NFL, but they've gotten through it. And most places they restrict the crowd or they just don't have a crowd at all. They're trying that with the NBA. But you've got, again, the players traveling. And when you have that, it makes it really hard to say what's going to happen. You just try to do the best you can. Games are going to be postponed. Games might be canceled. We may not get through all 72 games. If I were to bet for anything, it would be that maybe they finished the season, but maybe not every team is able to get all the games in. I hope that's not the case. I hope once the vaccine comes along, and hopefully pretty quickly, maybe starting next week, that more people will be starting to get the vaccine, and maybe in a month or two, we're going to be telling a much happier story than we're telling now. But I look in the crystal ball or the magic eight ball, that plastic magic eight ball used to shake, and the answer is, it depends.
Yeah.
and I hated the eight ball when I came up with that answer. Oh, you're just mocking me now. But that's really the answer. It depends. It depends on how people react, and it depends on, outside factors that right now you and I can't control as to exactly how quick we're going to get the vaccine and how effective it's going to be. And, the other part of the story is, as far as letting down your guard, we've heard cases, and I see this on ESPN, some players apparently have tested positive twice for COVID.
Yeah.
I know there's an attitude like that out there among some that once you get it, well, then somehow you build up an immunity. That's not the case. I think we've both seen that, up close and personal, that there have been people that we've been associated with that have gotten it twice. So, neighbor across the street. So, this part of it is really hard to control or to factor into it right now. I just hope that people can kind of steel their resolve a little bit longer. It won't be that much longer, a few months. And, we can start getting a handle on this horrible pandemic. And, in the meantime, the effect, as we're talking about the toy department of life and sports, is that we get the games in and everybody's safe in all these professional sports leagues.
Meanwhile, you've got some of the star players in the NBA that are misbehaving. You've got Kyrie Irving, who's been out for a while, and he was seen, or at least reported to be, maskless in public at a family gathering. I think it was his sister's birthday. And James Harden, that happened before the season even started. But now he's got sort of this attitude where he's saying the team isn't good enough. So that locker room is probably in trouble. And he said that he didn't think it could be fixed. So it's almost like, man, you better trade this guy soon, because if he's saying that it can't be fixed and you're going to be playing along that way every game you play, every week that goes by, it's not good for the team. So it's tough for the Rockets, because you can't just trade them away for nothing, but at the same time you got to do it as fast as you can.
I get that he's frustrated, and sometimes a team needs a good kick in the butt, but that's not what this is. And I know he's butted heads with ownership there. All this does is cast a pall over the Rockets now about, all right, he's unhappy. Yeah. Are we going to be able to pull off a trade? Harden told Fertitta before this season started that he didn't believe in the team's direction and that he didn't believe they were contenders. So, and Fertitta is saying, I'm disappointed, but we'll do an exploration of the trade market in good time, but it's going to be on our timetable. Basically telling him, don't start yelling about trade me or else. It's a bad situation all the way around. It's clear that he's kind of checked out mentally, even though, and I mean that in that he's made comments like that and it's not helpful. He's still a great performer on the court, and there are a lot of teams would love to have him. He's put on a few pounds, apparently. I don't know how much that's effective. It doesn't seem like a whole bunch, at least so far. So this can't resolve itself unless they find a way to deal James Harden and get something good back, because it looks like this marriage is starting to break up. And as far as Kyrie, oh, you mean to tell me the flat earth guy is going around not wearing masks? Okay, that's a shot.
Yeah. Well, Stephen A. Smith actually said that he should retire. Did you see that?
That Kyrie should retire.
Yeah.
And what was the reasoning for that?
I guess just because of the problems that he's causing. So.
Well, yeah, that is a problem. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, I think the Brooklyn Nets would like to retort to that, because a lot of people are talking about that them as, you know, NBA title contenders. With Durant back and looking so great, you know, they've got to figure that one out too and resolve it. There's no doubt about it. He's a piece of work. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, the player on the floor, well, we've seen it. You know, he helped lift the Cavaliers to a championship. Hit the biggest shot of his life and the biggest shot in Cavaliers history of that three late in game seven in 2016 that broke the Warriors' heart. I was there in the arena at the time, and I mean, the air went out of that place when he hit the three, because the Warriors just weren't scoring down the stretch. They had one of their inexplicable droughts. I mean, the guy is a special player. Few players who've ever been on the court have had better handles than Kyrie. He can break down just about anybody one-on-one, but he's a different sort of cat.
Yeah.
And I think the Nets know that.
Yeah, no, he's a great player. All right, so to finish up the schedule, Warriors are going on the road. At Denver, you already mentioned, you know, with Porter on the COVID list, you know, maybe they're weakened a little bit. And then at Phoenix, if that game actually happens because of their issues, and that's a different, better team now. And the Lakers, of course, the defending champs. So those are your next three games. And then even looking ahead after that, San Antonio, always tough. Knicks are a little bit better. Utah's a really good team. So it's not easy. I mean, things have been going pretty well for the Warriors lately. Now they really have to fasten their seatbelt, because it's going to be a pretty difficult ride here for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's why you would have liked to have banked that win last night and go on the road 7-4. It's going to be a challenge for sure. Suns are a very good defensive team, by the way. They've got several real good defenders, and that's not something they've been known for the past. I mean, they're a player here, a player there, a player like P.J. Tucker, but that's not been the team identity. They're much better this year, so that's going to be a challenge, you know, depending on what happens with the contact tracing with them. And I think the Nuggets are better than they've shown so far this year. So I think we'll get a much better idea about this team after this road trip.
All right, Ray, look forward to talking to you about it next week.
Sounds good, Joe.
Thanks for listening to the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Join Joe Castellano and Ray Woodson again next week on thesportsvirus.com.